everybody. This is a special meeting of the Highlight Board of Trustees, and we're here tonight to discuss our proposal for ambulance transport services. And most importantly, we're here to hear from you all and answer questions that you may have about this service. And we'll be happy to stay here as long as you would like. When you come up to the podium, go ahead and remove your mask so we can all hear a little bit better when you speak. And make sure the microphone is on and get a little bit close to it, like I am, and just tell us who you are and where you live. That'd be appreciated. So we're gonna go through this agenda tonight. We're gonna start with a welcome, which we just concluded, and a review of the purpose and procedure for the meeting. I will be handling that. And then we're going to have a conceptual overview and the rationale for this proposal. And Chief Rubisky over here to my left will be doing that. And then we've been very fortunate to have a relatively active subcommittee of citizens led by Steve White with Pat Wilson on that. And Jason Jarrett from our trustees to help us think through this. And Steve, I think, is going to give just a few remarks. Then we're going to have trustee remarks, so you can hear from all of us about how we're thinking about this issue. And then a bunch of public comment. I just want to make sure everybody understands tonight that there are gonna be no decisions made. We have our regular board meeting on the 20th. That's where we do the public's business. Tonight is just simply a Q&A informational session. We're always eager to hear from district residents about what they think about everything related to the fire service. So the purpose of the meeting tonight is information, a two-way conversation. We've had some very helpful public comment that comes in via email. We've had a dedicated cadre of residents who come to most every meeting, and we appreciate that. And those questions have helped us better develop and think about our proposals. But this is an issue that this board has been considering over the last 4 or 5 months, but it's one that is not at all new to the district. I think in my tenure on the sourdough board prior to the merger, we discussed this notion of ambulance service probably a decade ago. So it's something that's been bubbling up, and it's not just a bolt that has come out of the blue. So that's what we're gonna do tonight, and I'm gonna turn it over right now to Jason to describe the proposal and where it came from. Actually, it came from him upon his recommendation. As I mentioned, the board's been discussing it for 4 or 5 months or so. So without further ado, Jason, I'll let you speak up.
Sounds great. Want me to take my mask off?
Let's see how it goes, if you can hear you.
So I half joking. Well, let me see. I half jokingly say that because I just got released from quarantine. I had two family members get COVID. They did very, very well, very mild symptoms, but I had to do the 14-day quarantine because I was exposed. So, but I'm gonna keep my mask on just in case. I was tested no less than twice. Got negative results. Feeling good about it. So, Pete wanted me to give you guys just a little bit of background on why we're even talking about this. So for those of you who haven't been to any of our previous meetings, what we're talking about doing is expanding our services to include, and I'll be very cautious with this word, more ambulance transport. So historically, here at the Highlight Fire Department and what was previously the Ray and Sourdough Fire Department, we were two and now one single entity that provided fire, rescue, being motor vehicle accidents and other various forms of rescue that we're asked to do, service calls, gas leaks, all that kind of stuff, and primarily EMS calls for emergency medical services that come through our system via the 911 system. So if a resident dials 911, it goes through that system, we get dispatched, we respond. And we have historically responded at an EMT level of response. So we have held a non-transport EMS license with the state of Montana for decades. And we continue to do that. And at this moment, we're still on the current trend of either all of our firefighters are EMTs or they're in EMT school because they're just new and went through our recruit academy. So that was a question that was asked through one of the emails, is how many of our folks were EMTs? And the answer to that is that they all are. The typical trajectory is someone comes in as a new recruit, they either have their EMT, or when they get done with our fire recruit program, then they go to EMT class here in Bozeman and get their EMT. But it is a standard of care for our fire department and has been for quite some time. We own an ambulance. This has also been a big misconception for what we're proposing. We call it QRU 6 or Quick Response Unit 6, but we've owned that ambulance for, I believe, 8 years, and we've used it as a surge capacity transport unit. We take it on every single medical call. Our original reason why we bought it as a retired unit from the Big Sky Fire Department when they deemed it no longer serviceable was just to have a smaller, easier to drive vehicle to respond to medical calls as opposed to always taking out a large structure engine. It's done very well. It's four-wheel drive and has served us very well. But over time, we have had to use it to transport patients more and more each year. To kind of illustrate that for you, I was able to get some numbers from our 911 center, and between January 1st and mid-September, and these are rough numbers because it's very difficult for them to pull out every single case where our QRU 6 or our ambulance is used, but we were called out 23 times to do ambulance transport when AMR was not available, since January 1st to mid-September. Interesting date, just on September 8th, AMR was not able to send us an ambulance twice in one day, and we had to do our own ambulance transport that day. So the reason we're here talking about this today is not because we've never done this before or EMS and EMT level work is not something we're accustomed to. It's because there is a deficiency in the current system in Gallatin County. And the deficiency is that we have a third party private ambulance service that their goal is to cover this entire valley for EMS transport. And the reality is that they don't have the staffing or capability to do it. It's not a new problem. It just has become worse each and every year. One of the backups we enjoyed for years to AMR was Bozeman Fire. AMR had a contract with Bozeman Fire, who owns an ambulance, that when they weren't available, Bozeman Fire Medic 1 would back them up, and AMR would financially reimburse them for that service. Well, as of about the first of the year, at our fire council meeting, AMR announced that they would no longer be reimbursing Bozeman Fire for transports outside of the city of Bozeman. And then shortly thereafter, Bozeman Fire announced that they would not be using their ambulance for services outside of the city of Bozeman. So not only were we in a bit of a deficit before that, once that happened, now we're in, sorry to say, a double deficit, that we don't have the backup of Bozeman Fire. And I'm not here to vilify Bozeman Fire. Let me explain why Bozeman Fire did that. AMR is not available for their transports enough that they need their ambulance to be in the city to handle all the times that AMR isn't available to do an ambulance transport. And that's a very important point of this, is not to vilify them, to say AMR is not available frequently enough that Bozeman Fire can't leave the city and help their neighboring fire departments because they need to have their ambulance inside the city. On that day in September 8th, where AMR wasn't available twice for us, two calls in a row for an ambulance, they were also not available for Bozeman Fire two times that day during the same period. That's a big deficit in the service. So the reason we're talking about this, and like Pete said, this has been a long time coming. This isn't a new problem. It just, we can't keep kicking the can down the road any further. is we want to ensure that we have a reliable and robust ambulance transport service for our customers, our taxpayers here in the Hyalite Fire District. It's the only reason we're talking about this. Nobody at this fire department, nobody on this board of trustees has a love affair with ambulance transport. We just simply see a need and have recognized that, there is a very cost-effective and effective means for us to fill that void in the system. So, again, we have already been doing transport for years. We just haven't been doing it with great frequency. So then another question that's come up is, why do you want to do it with more frequency? Why not just continue to do it the way you're doing it today? And my answer to that is, if we want our folks to be good at what they do, they need to do it with some regularity. And I know we've been called out 23 times, but in the ambulance transport world, when I have 50 volunteers and 4 paid staff, I want them to have more practice doing what they do than that. And I think that's a very important function of an ambulance service, is that they do that business. That's what they do. The other question I've heard is, why are you kicking AMR out of your district? Well, we're not. That's not part of the plan. We have a very integrated plan with AMR currently, is what's been proposed to the Board of Trustees, that would keep AMR on a number of our dispatch run cards, as we call them, which is just what units get sent out to what type of calls. So we are not in any way getting rid of AMR altogether. What we're trying to do is fill in the gaps and lighten the load and make sure that we have enough units for all the transports, and make sure that when we send an ambulance, we have folks that are going to provide the very best service that we can afford to those customers that call up our service. We want to do this in a very cost-effective way. The current proposal to the board right now does not increase anybody's property taxes at all. Absolutely no increases. There's no additional staffing or personnel in the plan. So we've gotten quite a few emails from people saying, our taxes are high enough, we can't take any more tax burden. That's not part of the plan. That is not even close to what has been proposed to the Board of Trustees. I think Pat, who I hate to speak for people, but in our last committee meeting, Pat said, I've now gotten to the point where I feel like we are adding to the resource pool. You know, we're not taking anything away, we're not diminishing anything. We are actually, by standing up a more frequently used and utilized ambulance transport service, where we're actually strengthening the entire system in Gallatin County. Because most other districts, like Gallatin, Gateway, Fort Ellis, Bridger Canyon, they have no ambulance transport capabilities. They fully 100% rely on AMR. And that's a difficult place to be when AMR isn't able to put a unit on every single call. Our administration, the board, just do not find that acceptable to our customers, that we don't have an ambulance available with trained professionals for every single call. So I don't want to go on and on, but I'll be here all night. We can talk as much as you guys want, but I'm going to turn it back to Pete.
Thanks, Jason. Bob, how are we doing with the sound? Good? Okay, great. We've had some acoustic challenges. I neglected at the beginning to have the trustees introduce themselves, which I apologize. We'll probably do that down in trustee remarks, just in case you're wondering. And the way this meeting, I think, is going to flow best is if anything Jason has said has generated questions, please write them down, and we'll get through them in the public comment period. Steve, are you ready to make a few remarks?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good evening, trustees and public. I'm not a trustee. I'm not a county commissioner. I'm just somebody who had a lot of questions, and I ended up becoming part of a committee. So if you ever come to a meeting and you have a lot of questions, you might end up spending some extra time going to committee meetings, and that's what I did. And I appreciate Pat Wilson and Jason Jarrett, who was a trustee, was at one of our meetings, and they were held here, and then also Jason, pre-COVID, was here. And What I'm here to talk about tonight is something that I wanted the information. I just, when I first heard about this, and I'm not here to pitch the ambulance service, and I'm not here as a proponent or an opponent. I'm simply here as somebody that worked on a subcommittee to put together some information that is valuable to the public. And it's, what is it going to cost? And is it going to affect our pocketbook? And that's a big deal to me. And so the sheet is on, was on the back table, I noticed. It's in the staple things. Everybody has one. And it's a spreadsheet. It's very simple. It's a single page. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go through it. And when we started working on this, I just simply had questions. What is it? What are the expenses for an ambulance service? Because if we're going to do an ambulance service, it probably should be separate from the fire district. It shouldn't be subsidized by the fire district. It should stand on its own feet and maybe even be a cost center within the district. So what we developed was just by asking those questions of different costs that could come up for running an ambulance service. First of all, how many calls a year would you expect? And so there's three columns. There's 100 calls a year, 150 calls a year, and 200 calls a year. So there's numbers attached to each one of those columns. Okay, so for each call, that has an estimate of $25 in supplies. Presently, when the ambulance does its service, as Jason has talked about, the 23 calls, I guess, the fire district, your tax dollars are paying for the supplies. Nobody's being reimbursed. So we figure out it's $25 a call, and the cost of fuel, maybe $3, maybe $6. I've got some changes here that I'm going to throw out just to give you an idea of what could be affected. And then we also added a stipend for the EMTs, $50 per EMT for a call, two EMTs on a call, so that's $100. And then that's on the expense side. There's annual expenses for software, reporting software, and also we felt that it would be appropriate to set aside some money for a capital replacement instead of just having that ambulance run all over the place and then at the end of its life, there's no money there to replace it. So for 100 calls a year, we said $12,000. For 150 calls, $18,000. And 200 calls, $24,000. That would be an annual amount that would be put into this kitty. So you can see the total costs. So for 100 calls in a year, it's 100 year in a year, the costs are $25,550. So that's your cost. Now the next section is revenue. Now is where the money would be coming in that the person, the patient or the family would be charged just like an ambulance. But there's two types of charges. One is for those citizens that live inside the district that would need that service. And because you're already a tax-paying district member, it's we used a number and just picked a number, $500. So presently you're probably paying a lot more than that for an ambulance call. But since you'd be in the district, it'd be $500. If somebody needs that ambulance that is in, maybe physically in the district, but they're not district members, they're not citizens in the district, they maybe live up Spring Hill, they would pay out-of-district costs. And that, we put a number of $2,000 for that call. So that number that's above the 500 and the 2,000 says is a 60%. And what that 60% is, it says just we don't know, but maybe after 6 months you'd know that 60% of the calls were for people that paid $500, and 40% were for people that paid $2,000. So if that was the mix, what would you expect in revenue for 12 months? And it's $110,000. So that would be money coming in. Then we figured, well, maybe some people aren't going to pay their bills. That does happen. And so taking the $110,000, if 30% of them didn't pay their bills, we would eat $33,000. So you got to figure that in as a cost. And that would leave $77,000 that would be left over as revenue. Then since the district wouldn't be doing the billing, it would go to a billing service, they charge 8% for every dollar that comes in that's collected. So it's not 8% of what you bill, it's 8% of what was paid. So they get their money when the bills are paid. So we said, okay, if $77,000 were non-delinquents, 8% of that is $6,160. So again, that's another cost. And if you take the total cost from above that $25,550, you can see it further up under the expense section. You take all of those expenses out and it gives you a net revenue. I don't use the word profit when it's a government entity. It's called net revenue of $45,000. And that's after you've paid $12,000 into your capital replacement fund. And so there's actually some money left over. And then if you go over to the 150 column, you'll see 68,000. And there's 200 calls, 91,000. Now, note that with $91,000, that because there were 200 calls, we put in $24,000 against capital replacement. So we put in a bigger number. And so you still ended up with $91,000. This is just nothing but a spreadsheet. And I just made a few changes just that you don't have, but I'm just going to tell you what they are. If you go to the percent of calls that are district residents and it says 60%, if it was evenly split, it was 50-50, that would change your revenue. So less district residents receiving service, but you'd have more higher paying people in the mix. So your net or the 100 calls would go from $45,000 up to $54,950, basically $55,000. So you go $10,000. If that reversed and you went the in district people were only 40%, then it would go up to $64,000. And so it makes a difference because now you have a lot more people that are outside the district that are paying $2,000 and not $500. Now obviously if it was no out of district people, then everybody would be paying $500 and you wouldn't have any of those higher payers. So you wouldn't have as much money coming in. Another change I made, just to give you an idea, tweak it down just a shade. Yeah, there you go. Okay, now get closer to the microphone. One other change I made, leaving everything else the same, I said, well, what happens if half the people don't pay? You know, maybe half of them don't pay instead of 30% don't pay. And that would mean that $55,000 would be eaten by the district. That would reduce your net revenue down to $25,000. So you're still in the plus. And so that's pretty encouraging. The other thing was the cost of fuel. You know, $3. Is it really $3 for the cost of fuel for a run? I mean, what if it's $6? Okay, so if I change it from $3 up on that one box to $6, I'll double it. We'll double the amount of fuel. If the 100 calls, the net for the year goes down to $44,900. So you're spending more money on fuel, but it's pretty insignificant when you look at the bottom line. The whole point of this exercise for our committee, it was for the, we were charged to look at this for the board. The board would make the decision. These are just the numbers that we just put together just to give it's kind of confirmation in my mind as to that, okay, it's not going to come out of tax dollars. And there's going to be money set aside to add another ambulance or replace an ambulance. That, to me, is huge. The one thing this will not provide, though, is this only works with volunteers. You add one full-time EMT, and it blows it apart. So when you look at these numbers, don't think you're going to go out and start an ambulance service and expect to make money unless you get a lot of people that are EMT trained and very quality individuals and they don't want to be paid for that. But this does include a stipend. We seem to, I think that's fair, you know. And but I'm encouraged that if these numbers are real, and then and we would know after 6 months, probably, certainly over a year, because like Jason said, we don't know, we can't get the real numbers. You can't get them from AMR, we can't get them from other districts, we can't get them from 911. So we just kind of had to use the expertise of the chief and try to come up with something. So I'm gonna be around to answer questions on this, and but I appreciate the opportunity to go through the numbers, and that's what they are.
Thanks, Steve. Pat, did you want to make any comments? I just want to thank you guys for putting your shoulder to the wheel here and helping us. And, you know, we've gotten some comments about how the model that Steve's put together is simple. And, of course, that's the point of a model, is to simplify the world so you can sort of think about it a little bit clearer. And nobody is pretending or believing that this model is precise in that sense, but rather it's a starting point to help the board and members of the public answer some questions and think about this from a sort of numerical perspective. And as Steve has suggested, now we have a baseline that we can, if we choose to go forward with this, we can adjust against the baseline numbers as we start to get data over time. So thank you guys for doing that. So what I'd like to do in trustee remarks is rather than have detailed questions and answers by the trustees, which we will certainly can engage in the next item, is to introduce yourself, tell us how long you've served on the board, and then just some philosophical comments about how you're feeling about this proposal generally. If you care to reflect back on previous board meetings that some people may not have attended, that'd be fine. The point of this part of the meeting is to let members of the public hear how we as individual trustees are thinking about this. So Nick, I'll start with you.
Thanks. They're turned on here. Thanks, Pete. My name is Nick Schroeder, and I'm in my third year, my first and maybe only term, I don't know, of this Highlight Fire District. I do have a background. I was back in the 70s when we used a garden hose and a pickup truck trying to maybe put out a wildland fire to help a neighbor starting Sourdough Fire Company. I was involved with that. And then later president and two-term president of the board of Highlight Fire, Sourdough Fire District when it became a tax district. So I'm interested in all of this, and I, when Highlight was formed, then I started coming to the meetings. In the beginning, as I see the evolution, we started out with fire, taking care of fire, and then pretty soon there was, well, more ambulance calls, medical calls. Pretty soon I know Ray tore down a building and put it back up and had a room because they could have more stuff related with blood and medical. And as time went on, why it became more of an EMS service, as I understand, were anywhere from 50 to 60% of the calls are medical and lesser amount fire. And I look at this as saying that all the money that we have budgeted, all the money that the public has let us have, and we have in the budget, has gone and is earmarked for that service. And thus, any money that any effort that goes to a transport service has to come from somewhere, and that takes money out of the fire slash EMS emergency side. And the public may want that, and maybe that's the best way to go. But it gets complicated because BLS transport service is not a service that is being provided. That's what's in the proposal. We do those transports. We have the EMTs and the equipment and the unit. And so you have to say, well, is there no new taxes? No, there is no new mill levy. But money that's been already in our budget is being repurposed to this medical side. And the public may want that. And that's all right if that's what the public wants. But I think that, and hopefully our discussions and all of this will sort through that so the public can weigh in and say, yeah, we think that's a good thing to do, be a good neighbor and to build a robust transport system for everybody around. On the other hand, what are we going to take out of the budget when we move line out of the budget for ambulance stuff on a transport? Then are we going to have to take less money for some other facet of the fire EMS side? And one of the things when we do surplus budgeting in this organization, we were able to build up reserve funds to be able to buy equipment and do money for that. Well, maybe now we're not going to be able to make those reserve funds bigger and buy some needed equipment on the fire side. We could have used it on the ambulance side. And that's fine. That's what the public wants. So I think there's some nuances in all of this that I struggle with and try to understand. And so I hope we can work through some of these and come up with a solution that the public wants and that works with the volunteers and the fire and the board, and then the board has a solid footing upon which to make a decision. And indeed, it's this board that will make that decision because there is no new bill levy money, but it's still a decision that's going to take money out of an existing budget that has not already contained money for a true transport service. So, thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Walt, I'm going to skip over to you and then I'll that clean up.
My name's Walt Zydak.
Can you turn that on and get close to it? Thanks.
My name's Walt Zydak, and I started with the Ray Fire Service Area. Served a couple of terms on Ray Fire Service Area, and when the merger occurred with Ray and Sourdough, ended up serving on the Highlight Board from inception until current time. Currently serving as the treasurer, and so I'd just like to elaborate on a little bit with regard to the capital replacement plan. Our current capital replacement plan does in fact include monies for replacement of our QRU that's currently in service.
And excuse me one sec, Bob, can you hear this okay? You're leaning forward. Okay, thanks.
Great. So I just want to make sure that everyone's aware of that, and we do we are fully aware of the costs incurred with that, and we will make that capital replacement plan available to anybody who's interested in looking at it. And that's one thing that I've noted in my time with this board and the Ray Fire Service Area Board is the board has made every attempt to use our tax dollars judiciously and reserve a portion of those dollars for capital replacement so that we make every effort to not go back to the taxpayers when we need to replace an engine or a water tender or a piece of apparatus of that nature. We've tried, and I think we've been successful in the time that I've been on both of those boards, in reserving funds to accommodate a reasonable capital replacement plan. And we do have staff that are very good at maintaining our equipment and stretching the lifespan out if necessary to accommodate that capital replacement plan. If we feel as though there's a deficit, we'll stretch something out a little bit, but not to the point where there's a safety factor that's going to be violated. So I just want to make that comment. And I think, I'd just like to say that thank Pat Wilson and Steve White for spending the time as community members to look at this. And I think it's something, given the vagaries moving forward in the future, the vagaries of ambulance service to our constituents, it is something that we need to take a serious look at. And if we can at all accommodate providing that service in a reasonable fashion to our constituents and reduce the risk factors associated with losing ambulance service to our constituents, we should do that. So,
thanks, Walt. Mr. Miller.
Hi everyone, my name is Justin Miller, and I live on Cougar Drive in the Highlight Foothills area. And I was a firefighter starting, back in 2007 for a few years, and I've been on the Ray board and on now the Highlight board. So just my take from it, he just mentioned, we have a QRU right now that is old and worn out. So we are going to replace it, you know, in our capital replacement of getting a new ambulance. So Jason, what's, do we have, AMR has two or three crews working a day?
Yep, it's highly variable. I'd okay. say that they have two crews on for the entire valley. Sometimes they have three, but at nighttime they definitely only have two.
Okay.
And that's part, if I take one second, one of the difficulties in their staffing model is that AMR, for financial reasons, puts a pretty strong amount of effort into inter-facility transports, which are different than 911 calls. So if one of your relatives is at Bozeman Deaconess Hospital and the physicians deem that he or she needs better care at a higher level facility and needs to go to Billings or Missoula or even Salt Lake City, they will call AMR to do that ambulance transport. So they refer to that as an inter-facility transport. And one of the difficulties is when you're in the business of inter-facility transports, every piece of your resource that is taken off the street to do that inter-facility transport is no longer available for 911 calls. So
just my perspective, if we have two ambulances for AMR that's covering the whole valley, going up to Highlight, going to Three Forks, you know, anywhere that they need to go, right? And so our job as board members is to protect our constituents, our customers. And so I want to make sure that we, you know, if AMR were to leave, if something else were to happen, that we can take care of our people here. And so if you dial 911, does anybody have an idea, you know, that I don't know if AMR will show up, I don't know if the ambulance will show up, and that's what my fear is. And so my goal is just to protect our customers, and we want to find a way that it doesn't cost anybody anything, not going to, you know, go to taxes and raise anything, but I just want to know that when anybody in our district calls 911, that an ambulance will show up to take care of them. So.
Thanks, Justin. I'm Pete Geddes. I'm chair of the board. I joined the Sourdough Board, I think, in 1999, when Chief Crandall, who's in back there, was our chief, and we had the North Bay and one truck and a $305,000 budget or something. And not too long after I joined that board, we started talking about this issue, as I mentioned. And I think one of the fundamental obligations of any Board of Trustees, and particularly this Board of Trustees, is to try to look out over the horizon a little bit and make sure that we're ahead of the curve. You heard Walt, who serves very ably as our treasurer. You should really rest assured about the finances of this organization, with Walt overseeing the books, has worked very hard to do is build this capital replacement fund. Because prior to the establishment of that fund, whenever we wanted capital equipment, even things like turnout gear, sort of basic stuff, it was a tax issue. And those of you who lived here through the mill levy struggles, it took about a decade to get this building built, knows how contentious those issues are. And so over the last decade, really, this board and previous trustees have made a fantastic set of progress in putting money aside. We're still not there. Fire equipment just happens to be bloody expensive. But we are in a position that I think is enviable for most fire districts in terms of not having to come to the voters when we need to replace big capital equipment like fire trucks. And again, we're not there, but we have been putting surpluses away every year consistently, and that is a huge win for our taxpayers. And this service is a little bit tied to that. We see what we think is a need to make sure that our residents have the kind of service that they've been accustomed to, which is very highly motivated and well-trained and very nice people, showing up in timely fashion, with equipment that's in good repair and with the equipment that they need to do the job serving you. So, and from my perspective as a board member, there's no more important job for a trustee to engage in and then trying to think out a little bit over the horizon to anticipate needs of the community. And of course, as Nick said, we desperately would love to have this many people at every public meeting. We don't. And I'm going to ask you at the end of the meeting, so you can think about this, is how you heard about this. So did you go to the website? Was that an effective thing? We spent years and tens of thousands of dollars trying to communicate with district residents in various means and have never really come up with a very good way to do that. So that's important to us, to know how you got this information going forward. But again, just to summarize, I think what this board is engaged in is exactly what you hired us to do and exactly why we're constituted under Montana code, and that is to make sure that we are being responsible, not only responsible stewards of your tax dollars, but responsible in thinking about the emergency services that we provide our community. So with that, we're gonna have public comment and questions. And if you'd like to come up to the podium, again, remove your mask, get close to the microphone, tell us who you are, and let us know your questions. What I'm gonna ask the trustees to do is let's just wait a little bit and we can write the questions down. Rather than going back and forth, let's get a sense of what the questions are. Okay, that sounds good. The podium is open. You can't have come all this way not to have any questions. Bob, I'm going to call on you because you come to most meetings. So you come on up here. Tell us your two cents. You've seen a lot of these meetings. Tell these folks how you think the meetings go, if nothing else, on this particular issue. Thank you.
I'm Bob Ogram. I live in what is constituted as the current district for about 45 years. So I have been here for a while. To your comment about meetings, Pete, I think Pete runs a great meeting. If you have an opportunity to come to a regular meeting, you should do so. He hosts the agenda in nice style. Regarding the ambulance service, I think there's a need. Obviously, we all want good ambulance service. I do have questions relate to, because I'm going through the spreadsheet. They're all estimates, and I don't know how you get any closer than those estimates. The chief said 21 calls in what time period?
Yeah, it was 23 calls from January 1st till mid-September that the QRE was called to do a transport when AMR wasn't available. And that's just the best numbers we have. It could be a higher number, it most likely is, but that's pulling CAD data out of 911.
So, is it possible to talk to other districts to get numbers who do ambulance service?
Well, we could. So currently, at this time, in Gallatin County, West Yellowstone through Hebgen Basin Fire District, Big Sky Fire, and Central Valley Fire all do their own ambulance transports. We could get transport numbers from them, but I'm not sure it would be very applicable to us.
Yeah, you always have.
Everybody has different calls. Well, Central Valley, take Central Valley for example, they probably run triple the number of calls, just total calls in a given year that we run. So their numbers are obviously going to be much higher dispatches. Are you talking about when AMR is not available? Or
just trying to estimate total calls.
Yeah.
What you're trying to get at, Bob, is something that I mentioned in my remarks because I think it's important. This model is just, it's a simplification of the world to help us get started. And more precision would be better. But I think the subcommittee learned, you guys can correct me if you think I get this wrong, is it's fairly complicated to get this information. It's not only, it's a function of how it's recorded sometimes and how we can retrieve it. So I think the sense of this trustee is that we have a baseline that Steve has put together. Is it perfect? No. Is it 65 to 70% right? Probably somewhere in that neighborhood. And then if we choose to go forward, we just monitor it. For 6 months, we start to input real data. So for example, supplies is something that's easy to track. And again, everybody should understand that we buy all these supplies already that are on the units. So there's no net increase in cost. But if for some reason we went to, I don't know, some mass casualty trauma, and we burn through supplies, we're gonna see that. You know, the board sees that in the financials. The chief will surely report that to us because he knows this is an issue in which we're interested. And I think in 6 months, we come back and we plug different numbers into that. And we run it, you know, probably for a year to get some really good data. So I don't think there's any good way to get, you know, to move that precision much closer. I mean, I feel comfortable that the downside risks of us getting into this in terms of finances are relatively low, so that if we make a mistake, it won't be a below the waterline hole to the district or its taxpayers. And I think Steve and his committee have done a reasonable job to try to approximate what that universe looks like.
The other question that came to my mind is, what happens to the surpluses? Once you pay all your expenses, your examples show, for instance, 45,000, whatever it is, for 100 calls. What happens to those dollars?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back on my original comments about holding questions, since it doesn't seem to be a huge press. What our thinking is on these surplus numbers, Bob, is that they go into that capital replacement fund.
Probably amounts to the comments I might have. Thank you.
Thank you for being a good sport.
Could I add something?
Of course, Steve.
Just a couple of things.
Yep, you bet. Oh, your question to me? Oh, perfect. Just two things, Bob, just kind of spurred my brain. The one thing that has not been clearly delineated tonight is, and if you look at the spreadsheet for 100 calls, $12,000 for capital replacement, 150 calls a year, 18,000, and then at 200 calls, if you had that many, close to 24,000. It's very important to understand that presently, I don't know what the capital replacement money being set aside by the district is right now for the QE, whatever it is. I think it's Queen Elizabeth when you say QE, but for that, for your ambulance or for a future ambulance or whatever, that's coming out of tax dollars. If this is a chargeable component of the fire district, now all of a sudden you are charging the users of the beneficiaries or those benefiting from the ambulance, they're paying for the capital replacement. And so what it does, it frees up, if let's just say the district's put $10,000 a year in a capital replacement out of your tax dollars, out of my tax dollars. Now all of a sudden, it's not coming out of the tax dollars, and then that's freeing up some money that, and even for gas prices, and because right now it's being subsidized. And if you get away from that and turn it into something where they're being charged for it, now the tax dollars aren't being used for those purposes. And so I saw that as a benefit. The other thing is, we didn't want to leave this as an empty, open-ended thing that we didn't know if it would still make sense if it scaled up. We didn't want to leave it at, our subcommittee didn't want to leave it at just 100 calls. So we added another column, 150 calls and 200 calls. Jason's already said that there's 23 calls, maybe 25, maybe 30 right now, which is really short from 100. So maybe the real number at the top should be 50. What would that look like? It's still going to be, you know, positive. But the idea was if you went to 200 calls or 300 calls, all of a sudden you get to a point that says, we can't afford this, we're going to have to back off. And I wanted to know if that were the case, and if not, if it gets better and you're able to put more money aside for capital replacements.
Thanks, Steve.
Chief.
Yes, ma'am. Did you have a question of Steve?
Yes.
If you could just stand by
the microphone.
Yeah, so everybody could benefit from hearing your question.
I went through all the questions.
Oh. We're all friends here. Just tell us who you are and get close to that microphone.
My name is Stella Allen, and I am a 30-plus year resident in Highlight Canyon. And I thank you all for your work. And I really appreciate what you do for our community. I'm wondering, and Steve, rather than clear it up, I think you, it befuddled me. So you said the capital replacement, and maybe Walt, this might be something for you too, that is tax money, right? That $12,000?
Present.
It's coming out, okay. And then the revenue, or profit, whatever you want to call that word, would work in conjunction with that surplus money then as well?
Right, that would be, I think that would be a correct interpretation, is that we would be able to use those monies to include those monies into our capital replacement. And so that would give us a little bit more flexibility. Because we do have the capital replacement dollars, we try to earmark them for different apparatus over time, but it's a tight budget, and so if we were to insert some of those monies into it, that would give us some flexibility moving forward.
Excellent. So it does increase the money we have to work with as a community or
right.
as a service. So I see this as a great benefit. I really do. And I had the privilege of speaking with Forest Service today, and they didn't know this meeting was happening, but they thought it was a great idea. But these were just guys on the ground. The whole search and rescue brings people out of the backcountry, and then it's that transport service that takes people at times locally. But if they have to go elsewhere, then of course that's a whole nother kettle of fish. But so they were pretty excited about the potentials. And so I wanted to let you know that. One of the things that concerns me though is there's, in the summertime, there's an excess of 8,000 cars that go up and down that road. Highlight. So I know that this service is going to become very popular. And so looking at that, you know, we kind of, I reckon because it is tax dollars, it is a government, it's a civic entity, but at the same time, why can't we run it like a business? So that we're able to make sure that we don't put you in a pinch, say if you need staff, or if it does require, you know, staffing, that there's able to set aside not just a general fund, but something that's more specific to the needs of a growing, I wouldn't call it a fire station, because that's what I romantically view it. Is that an insult?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all.
So that, I just...
And I know an insult, and that's not one.
Okay, all right. So I just leave you with that, because I want to see this succeed.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Stella, just to follow up, because you bring up some really good points. As Walt has discussed, you know, we have a capital replacement fund, and we have a capital replacement plan that tells the board, here's all the equipment we own, here's the lifespan of that equipment, and here's what it's going to cost to replace it over 25 years. And then it tells the board, you need to sock away X amount of dollars every year to fund this so that you have the money in 2025 to replace this engine. It doesn't provide any funds for new equipment, as in we currently have three engines and we want to add a fourth. That's capital improvement, not capital replacement. So these funds that we have been discussing are merely for capital replacement. And what Walt was trying to describe, you know, when I worked with Steve and Pat, who again, I want to thank them for all their work on this, because I can be a scatterbrain at times, and they did a great job of keeping me on track, is this is an incredibly conservative estimate of numbers. I mean, the fact that Steve included in here an automatic deduction out of our revenues of $12,000 to go to capital replacement, that's genius, because it is doing exactly what Walt is saying, is that's relieving the tax burden on the public for a unit that we already are using tax dollars to replace anyways. And that certainly is a boon for our residents and taxpayers. And the fact that through this ambulance service, this Board of Trustees, who is incredibly concerned and cognizant about costs to its taxpayers, to have them be the ones to set your ambulance transport rates, that's a big deal. Because right now, we have no control over what you pay for ambulance transport. That is completely controlled by a third-party for-profit company. And I'm not bad-talking them. There are third-party private ambulance services all over this country, but they're in it to make a profit. We're not in it to make a profit. We're in it to deliver service. That's our number one concern. That's why there's been no discussion of us doing interfacility transports. That's a for-profit venture. And we're not, that's not what we want to do. We want to make sure that when people dial 911, an ambulance shows up, takes care of them, gets them to the hospital, just like Pete said, with a smile on their face, kindness, compassion, and excellent medical service. So your questions and your comments are well received. Thank you, Stella.
Thank you. More comment? Yes, sir.
I'm John Lambert, been a resident in this district for 16 years, and again, want to thank everyone for their efforts, Steve and Pat especially. Having been in business, I know what budgeting and forecasting and everything, just is based on assumptions, but I think you thought through those assumptions very well. I have four questions. Does the concept include the ability to bill Medicare and insurance companies? Currently, AMR, that is a practice that they follow. Second question is, what is in the current reserve and budget or plan, and what is the actual amount currently in that plan? Or not actual in the plan, but actual dollars in the bank for that. My third question is, how do we track, or how do you track the response time from AMR, their experience, and what is intended to be the experience under this plan? Is it better or worse? And my last question is, if we get to the level where we need additional staffing, what does that staffing cost? I know you touched upon it, but I wasn't smart enough to record what the hard number was for that, including, you know, not only payroll, but benefits and things like that. So again, thank you, and good luck on this whole project. It's important.
Thanks, John. Appreciate that. So three out of those are to the chief. Let's take the one that is you, Walt, the current capital replacement. And I wonder, Cheryl, if we have those dashboards.
I'm looking it up right. I could give me just a second here, if somebody wanted to address another.
Okay, let's go with Jason then. So first one, Jason, is the ability to bill Medicare and insurance companies.
Yeah, the answer is absolutely. We've been talking with a billing company, Pintler Billing, which does billing for Central Valley and I believe Columbus, Red Lodge. I can't remember every, but they specialize in ambulance billing, and they absolutely would bill just like AMR does for Medicare and Medicaid. When one starts an ambulance service and bills through Medicare and Medicaid, one has to sign a contract with both those entities to accept their payment plan. If you don't sign the contract, they won't reimburse, so you're basically agreeing to take their compensation for that ambulance transport, and they're each a little different. Medicare is a little higher than Medicaid in their reimbursement rate, but Medicaid allows add-ons to the billing process, meaning if we were to give oxygen to a patient, Medicaid, which is through the state, allows you to bill an extra, and I'm making this number up, $50 for oxygen or whatever that may be. And then they can bill insurance companies exactly the same way that, yes, and follow up.
Does the plan include the level of reimbursement that we would get through Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance companies?
I mean, yeah.
It seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, when we looked at these numbers and tried to come up with a reasonable delinquency rate, we modeled it off of Central Valley, which is over, right over here in Belgrade. Again, we won't know till we know, but I think our demographic is at least is predictably able to pay ambulance bills as theirs, and they're at a 70% reimbursement rate for billing, which is excellent. Now that doesn't include, if you include the total Medicare, Medicaid package, it's more like 63 to 64%, but it's all in how you divvy out those numbers. But what very much affects the delinquency rate on billings or people not paying their entire bill is the cost of the bill. So the lower the cost of the bill is, in theory, the lower your delinquency rate will be. And that's right from the billing company who said, the more money you charge for ambulance transport, the less likely people are to pay 100% of that bill, so the higher one's delinquency rate will be.
Not to take this further than I could, but currently, if I call AMR or AMR responds to a call, they will bill the insurance company, or they will bill Medicare, Medicaid, Medicare, I know. And is that the plan that would be put in place here?
Yes.
So the original bill wouldn't go to the residents of the district, but would go to the district.
That is correct. Yes.
Okay, John, let's just keep going with Jason, if you don't mind, Walt.
Okay, sure.
So his third question was response time, us versus AMR.
Yeah, so we don't have all of their response times to study those numbers. We have our own, but anecdotally we can say that with very few exceptions, we either end up on scene before they do or at the same time that they do. The issue comes into where they're responding from. AMR has two response stations. One is on Main Street downtown, just right on the kind of the, I'd call it the west end of Main Street before you get to 7th Avenue. The other one is off of Griffin on the north side of Bozeman. So if the south truck, which is the one downtown, isn't available, which that is their busiest truck, we're waiting for a truck to respond all the way from Griffin. And they're surrounded by railroad tracks, by the way. They picked a wonderful location. They cannot get out of their station without crossing a railroad track. So I would say that at a bare minimum, our response time would be as good as AMR's.
And then his last question was staffing cost. At least, like, you take just a minute with that and really explain our model here and what we got going on.
So our model currently is to utilize our volunteer workforce for ambulance transport. So we typically maintain, it's a moving number, but around 50 volunteer firefighters. We have 8 of them live as residents in this station. 3 live as residents at the Ray station. And then we staff our Cottonwood station with sleeper nights. So we have typically 4 firefighters sleep at that station. We don't believe we need additional paid staff for this project. We have talked at great length with our volunteer workforce. And again, remember, we're already going on all these calls. So these are not additional calls that we're going to be responding to. We already respond to every medical call that goes out in our district. We just don't always transport. So the difference only is we're already going to the call. Now, instead of putting them in AMR's ambulance, we'd be putting them in our ambulance more regularly and driving them to the hospital. So as far as a burden on our volunteer workforce, I think we've been able to very accurately assess that this, you know, this is going to add 10 or 15 minutes to a call for our volunteer workforce. And they are very motivated and excited about doing that. I have a couple of them here. If the board chooses, they can speak at some point, but you just have to take my word for it that this is something our volunteers want to do. The citizens of this district, and I don't want to oversell this, but you guys are very fortunate to have the type and quality of individuals that volunteer here. I worked for the Big Sky Fire Department for 15 years. We had volunteers and paid staff there. I've been around the country, and I can just tell you that the level and quality of volunteers that you have at this department is off the charts. They're just excellent at what they do, and they take a lot of pride in it.
Okay, John's last question, what was the capital replacement fund? So just say if you
can. Oh, wait, can I go over a bit? So, to answer your question about the cost of staffing, I believe AMR currently pays their EMTs $12 an hour. Now, I'm not saying that's what we would pay, but I'm just telling you that's the going rate currently.
And all of these, 100, 150, 200, do not require a full-time person? Is that the assumption that's been used?
Yes. I mean, other than the full-time staff we currently have, yeah.
But not adding.
Correct. That's correct.
So, if you come to a regular public meeting, we print a dashboard out for every one of those meetings, showing a bunch of metrics we think are important for people to get a visual look at. And one of those are the different capital replacement funds, which Walt has been looking up on his little iPad there, and he's now going to tell us about.
So, and this information is available to the public on our website. If you go to the tab on meetings, the consent agenda and meeting minutes and so on are available to anybody who would like to look at them. And so I'm looking at our consent agenda from the September meeting. And so as of August 31st, our capital reserve for apparatus replacement was $1,557,270. The building replacement repair had $4,473 in it. And I believe this, I think we need to, there's probably some monies that were added to that. I don't know if that's on this balance sheet, a few thousand dollars. And then capital improvement, we have a fund for capital improvement. And that's, as Jason mentioned earlier, we have replacement. And then if we choose to add to our complement, that would be an improvement. And so we have started putting some monies away for that sort of thing too. And we currently have $175,388 in the capital improvement account.
Does that get it all, John?
Thank you.
Yep, okay. More questions? Yes, sir, come on up.
Not really, of course, my name is Joel. I'm with Baird-Sink EMS. I just kind of came tonight just to kind of hear what you guys are looking for. The COO, John, and our new Bozeman ship, Captain Isaac, is here tonight. So I grew up in, I currently live in Red Lodge, and our primary branch is located now at Billings. I grew up here, I was high school here in Bozeman. I've lived here my whole life. I was on the raid back in the day, and then Gateway for 3.5 years, and Galvin Ranch for 4 years. So I guess I'm just here just to let you guys know that we hear you. We have a lot of network with services and organizations across the state. We obviously, as Jason was saying, we do interfacility transports. That's our thing, as well as events. Right now we're running over 100 a month. Out of buildings alone, and we're just in the next 2 weeks we should be in a, we're in the hiring process right now, so we're hiring EMTs and paramedics, so we'll be doing a full BLS critical care and ALS transport service here at Bozeman again, and some of the things that have come up that I just wanted to, you know, we have different numbers than you guys will as an 911 service. But our numbers are pretty similar in the character to AMR's. You know, and I definitely would be willing to sit down with you and help you guys model some of this a little closer. Because one of the things that hit us in the face pretty hard is Medicare loss and Medicaid loss. As Jason had said, Medicare doesn't do too bad with reimbursements. Medicaid's right now, average is $3.86 a mile with a $160 base rate is what they're reimbursing right now. It's a 30 cent raise from last year, so thanks Medicaid. And you know, a large majority of those, it is illegal to balance bill Medicaid patients. So if someone has, you know, someone's hiking up Palisades and they fall and they got Medicaid, Medicaid will pay you what they pay you. It may not be a profitable model for that call, and you can't go out to the patients privately for the balance of what's owed after Medicaid's done paying, which surprises us. We learned that the hard way. So anyways, I just want to let you guys know that we're here, and we're not part of your district, but we just want to let you guys know that we're here to support you in any way we can, and if we can use some advice on what we've struggled with, we'd be more than willing to. So Isaac's our Bozeman captain, so he's here in Bozeman all the time. John and I travel back and forth, so.
Thank you, Joel. Appreciate that. Just there's coffee and cookies over there if anybody is getting a little peckish. We neglected to introduce Brian Nicolai, our assistant chief. Brian, give a wave to the fans. And Cheryl, our administrator. Yeah. Okay, more public comment. Okay, so there's some board discussion. Anything else you'd like to say? Maybe we'll just go right down the line and start with you, Nick.
Thank you. As I struggle to learn about this and become more familiar, what I learned is that, and what I think I understand, is that we have, and we, as Jason rightly talked about, QRU6, Quick Response Unit. Fortunately for us, there are EMTs, which is necessary for a BOS transport, basic life support. They are usually there and on the scene, and they're there to stabilize the situation, stop the bleeding, get control of the situation. The next step in the continuum of all of this is a BLS transport if needed. I don't think the public understands that that's completely an elective process. It's a process that says if your arm's cut off and the bleeding stopped and your wife's there with a pickup truck and you know you don't have insurance and you're too young for Medicare, that she'll get to the hospital in time to take care of you. And there's not going to be any transport, there'll be a waiver signed. Now, that said, most people, when the situation happens and there's a BLS qualified transport ambulance there, as what our quick response unit is, necessarily, they will take that ride and go there. So this is truly a new service and maybe an important service to this district, but it's an elected service. And it's talking about AMR can't come in unless they're on the run card. In fact, if it does not go through 911 and you decide you need an ambulance, you call AMR if you get them, or Bear Tooth, and they can come in whether they're on a run card or not, as I understand it. Is that correct? It's not a 911 call, they just call the ambulance.
I don't know the answer to that question, Nick.
Okay.
Legally, technically, yes, but politically, no.
Yeah, I don't know if I have an absolute. I don't ever like to speak out of turn, but
so
I'm not sure the answer to that.
Right. Let's try to keep this so everybody can hear what's going on. So Nick asked Jason whether or not you could just make a phone call and get a third party to come and get you, and Joel back there said, Legally, yes. Politically, no. And I don't know, Nick, if you would like a more exposition of his statement, or if you want to just continue with your remarks.
Well, what I'm getting at is that this is an elective call. Even if it's a 911 call, the transport is an elective piece. Necessary, it's part of the continuum. But it's not a service we're providing. So we have an ambulance that's worn out, that's responding to our quick responses, and it's in our replacement plan, and we have the capital to do it, and we're going to replace that ambulance. That's money out of the tax side, the budgeted side. It has nothing to do with the transport side. So one question is in my mind, what do we do with the existing one we have? If this is a replacement, then that means the other one should go away, put it, sell it, do whatever. No, it sounds like we might want to keep that and upgrade it, because if we're in a transport service, it might be smart to have two units. So now, is the tax paid part of that QR6 that we have, do we donate that to the ambulance department for transport? I like transport. And then all the costs of maintaining that ambulance for transport is there. And then if we have to use our new ambulance, which is going to be for the quick response unit, as a backup to our transport ambulance, then we're using highlight fire emergency dollars and not ambulance dollars. It can work in any way, I believe, and the public can say, let's take our already purposed money for the first step, which is fire emergency or EMS emergency, up to where things are stopped, and then decide how we're going to pay for the rest of it. And if we're going to take money out of the fire side, I think we're not running a business, because we're getting money into that business and we're taking the money out of it, so we're going to put it back into the fire side. I think what we have to do is say, all right, let's keep track of it. If we have to take funds out of the fire side to do something, then when it's all said and done, the money that's really transport funded, paid for, through however, then they have to pay it back to the fire side. If we say it's all right to take all the money we want out of the fire side, that's going to reduce the amount of money, this $1.5 million that we have through our surplus budget for apparatus replacement. We won't have as much money in there anymore for apparatus replacement, because we're using it over here on the ambulance. The public has said, and the board has decided perhaps, that that's all right, let's just meld all of that. So I think I want to be a good citizen, and I want to have a good ambulance mutual aid, and I want it so that everybody's working together. But in order to know what it's going to cost our taxes that we're paying for on the fire EMS side, how much does it really cost us to do in our ambulance transport? In our 1 year, and I would suggest it be a 1 year trial max, as has been suggested by the committee and by the chief, and that we have a very strict accounting of all that goes into the real cost of making that transport. Because out of all of the calls we might get there, the person there could say, no, I don't want to transport. I have good insurance. I could conceivably get there, and Highlight would be there. And I say, no, I don't want Highlight. I want somebody else, because it doesn't matter to me if it's a $2,000 bill or $500 bill, because I've got good insurance. It's an elective choice at that point, and that really changes how the demographics might work. And this is a rural district. Central Valley is different. They've got Billings in it, or Billings, Belgrade, and they do Manhattan and so on. Bozeman does its own thing, so we're dependent upon what income we get, of whether we resident inside or a resident outside, there's so many things going on in that that I'm really concerned. I'm willing to try the experiment, this experiment, to see how it works, but I think it's really important that we set up a robust, keep track of the cost thing so that we are prepared to return to the taxable money that we've taken out of the tax side and use it for the transport side and be able to put that back in. Now, when they end, and so that side is made whole. In other words, this business runs. And then you add the billing on top of that, and how many bills we get, and how many we don't, and whether they take it or not. So I see it as a complex problem, and I think we really need to think it through, and I think if we're going to do this before we pull the switch to do it, I think our treasurer, chief, and all concerned need to have a good spreadsheet, really look at all the detailed costs. For example, $3 in gas, I just heard a number of a Medicare mile of 386. I know that the federal cost of 50 cents of per mile of something, and I don't know what a per mile cost would be on an ambulance. That includes insurance, it includes depreciation, includes taxes, and it includes maintenance. Or fuel and maintenance, not taxes, fuel and maintenance. Those are big numbers. So, figured out that that's how we pay, if we do a mileage basis, $3 a run for gas, to me, says this is a little bit slim in this estimate. It's a good place to start, but I think we really need to have something that's more rigorous, that reflects more of the types of costs of this, as if this was a real business. What complicates it for me, and what I think maybe the public, is this ambulance, the beautiful concept, the useful concept of this ambulance being used for quick response over the time, is an ambulance. Everybody says, well, that's it. We got an ambulance, we're gonna go with it. I believe I'm correct in saying that the quick response unit could be an EMTs with some equipment, but it could be a pickup truck. It could be the big fire engine, which is clearly a hard thing to do, or it could be a Suburban, or it could be one of the command cars. So all of this stuff goes through my mind and saying what really is the best way, and the bottom line is that any of our citizens in this greater area, whether they're going up Highlight, or whether I'm a citizen and I'm hurt down in Belgrade, or whatever, that we get the best combination of immediate, first up through the EMS stabilization, and the best way we can transport in a way that we all work together for the whole community, which means that there needs to be a good mutual aid for ambulance, which does not exist, and has been being talked about. And now we've got another thing, as I hear tonight, we have another player that if AMR, if we're afraid of them walking, we have another player that can fill that gap. So this business of we've got to have these people because we're doing only BLS, basic life support transport, not advanced life support, heart attacks and so on, that's dependent upon AMR to be done, and that's still what Highlight's going to use. Am I not correct? For ALS. Now that isn't to say some EMT levels with some certifications can't do something in the middle of that, but what I hear is that we're asking for a BLS transport service, not an ALS transport service. So we get into this, when we then graduate up to a ALS transport service, and the difference is not so much the unit, but some equipment on it, and a paramedic in the unit, not just EMTs. So am I stating this, Jason, right? Is it, am I on track here, or am I completely going south?
The one,
You're going wherever you want to go. But why don't, in the interest of time, since we're rolling on an hour and a half, and kind of wrap it up a little bit, one thing I'd like to do, since we have so many new faces here, if we can arrange it maybe with Brian, is just a walk through the bay. If people would like to see the equipment, if you've never seen it, see what your tax dollars are going to, that might be a nice way to end the evening. So maybe make some concluding remarks, Nick, if you got anything else.
No, I think I've hopefully been somewhat clear in my thinking, and I am not against this, but I can't always say right off I'm for it, and if I am for it, I certainly feel we need to run the experiment, and we need to be very careful and run it as a business so we really see all the true costs. And it's really hard to ferret that out. We're going to have more administrative costs, maybe. Well, that's going to be Jason or Brian or administrative helper. Is it an hour a month? Well, that's trivial. We can do that. But if it's significant, that's something else. Where does that money come from? No new taxes. So we're going to take the existing tax money and take it out of that and reduce then our ability to do other things with that money that we've already budgeted. I'm wrestling with that question and the understanding of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Okay, so next steps is the next agenda item, and then we're going to adjourn. And if people would like to hang around, in a sort of social distance way, I think Brian would be pleased. Unless you got commitments at home or something, I'm sorry to speak for you at the last minute. Just run you through the day if you'd like to see all that kind of equipment. So we have a regular board meeting on October 20th. And it's the board's intention to make a decision about this issue at that board meeting. So just would encourage you, if between now and then you have more questions, you can get on the website and reach out to all of us. If you'd like to, we'd be happy to help walk you through there and then come to the meetings. You know, we like when people show up. Again, as I mentioned, we struggle to communicate with district residents, except when there's a tax issue, and then we have no problem filling the entire day with people who are concerned. And part of our effort that you've heard over and over again tonight, and I'm just going to hit it one more time, this capital replacement fund, because it's so important, is that keeps your taxes down, our taxes down. And it's our intent to keep funding that. $1.5 million sounds like a lot, and in the fire service business, that's a truck and a half or a truck and something else. It's not that much. So thank you all for coming tonight. We really appreciate your interest. And if you'd like to tour with Brian, maybe just congregate here under the exit sign. And if not, we'll see you when we see you.